Welcome to 3CR, Kate. Thank you so much for offering to talk to us.
Pleasure.
Now, the UK has been in turmoil for some time now, and especially over the recent past, as recent as Monday, we had a major issue about the Triton going on. I wonder if you can explain what happened on Monday and what's to be expected since the votes took place Monday.
Yes, this has been a long-running debate in Britain about whether or not we should replace our nuclear weapons system, Trident. It's essentially an add-on to the US Trident system, their submarine, ballistic missile submarine fleet. But here, by some, particularly by the establishment, it's seen as, we call it, or they call it, our independent nuclear deterrent. And it's very much seen by the political elites as a kind of a status symbol. Anyway, this question about whether or not it should be replaced has been very, very hotly debated. And it's quite significant, in fact, that it has actually come to our parliament for a vote. In the past, things like nuclear weapons, they were done behind closed doors. You know, they weren't out there for public and parliamentary debate. So that was a step forward. And what we've seen over the past few years is an increasing majority across the country against nuclear weapons because people, well, there's the long running moral and legal questions, of course, but people have been much more engaged with the issue now because of the cost at a time when our government is imposing austerity policies, spending what's likely to be around $205 billion on this kind of Cold War weapon system. People don't see that as good value for money. They don't think that's what their money should be spent on. They would rather it was spent on hospitals or education or jobs. Or many people in the military actually think it should be spent on troops, on equipment for the troops, on planes, on things they can actually use. And of course, a key reason why many people now have turned against nuclear weapons, even if they were in favour of them before. A reason they've turned against them is because they're not seen as something that meets any of the security threats that we currently face. So things like terrorism, climate change, cyber warfare, pandemics, flooding, all these things that we recognise as 21st century security challenges. Obviously, no one suggests that Trident nuclear weapons could meet those challenges. So people think, well, what on earth is the point of having them? You know, so this debate has been going on, increasing change in public opinion. And what we've seen politically is very interesting as well. If I could just briefly add this.
Sure.
Whereas in the past, in Parliament, there was kind of more or less a consensus across the main parties in favour of nuclear weapons. Now we've seen a new political consensus emerging against. Most of the smaller parties, Greens, obviously, but the Scottish National Party, of course, totally against. That's virtually all the Scottish MPs. And, of course, with Jeremy Corbyn, who you will have heard of over
of
there, I hope, the new
course.
Leader of the Labour Party.
Yes.
He's very much against nuclear weapons, and he's vice president of Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. And so he's against them too. So this has sort of opened the door further. So that's how things have changed. But then, of course, on Monday, this was more or less the first important vote in the Parliament since we've had our new Prime Minister, the new Conservative Prime Minister, Mrs. Theresa May. So she wanted to get this through Parliament, show how strong she was, unite her party and take advantage of Labour divisions on this, because even though Jeremy is against it and many others, there are many within the Labour Party who are in favour of nuclear weapons and some who just wanted to use it as an opportunity to give Jeremy a kick. You know, so unfortunately, it went through Parliament because the Tories have a majority. But nevertheless, it is a campaign that is going to continue because actually building the submarines won't start for a long time. It takes decades to build them and so on. So you haven't seen the last of this campaign. It will continue. And many people think that these new submarines will never see the light of day because they're just too costly a project. And also they're vulnerable to new technological challenges like cyber warfare, underwater drone technology and so on. So that's where we are with that one.
It seems the Scottish National Party is fully in support of Corbyn's policies, and of course in conjunction with CND's policies to not to put money into this massive project, which is running totally against the social needs of the people. And obviously, as you mentioned, austerity is being felt by the people, and particularly in health, education and so on. And is that coming through to the ranks, that they are seeing the money spent on weapons when there's no money being spent on social programs?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really strong theme. In fact, in the past few years, CND has worked very closely with the anti-austerity movement and lots of local groups. I mean, we had a rally in Parliament Square on Monday evening, and we had speakers from People's Assembly Against Austerity, from the trade unions, from a remarkable campaigning group called Disabled People Against the Cuts. You know, that link is really, really very strongly being made. And just on the question of the SNP, you know, the Scottish National Party, when we were there opposite Parliament, many of the MPs came over to tell us what was happening in the debate, you know, as it was going on.
Excuse me, Kate, can you just hang on one sec?
So yes. The SNP MPs, they were coming over to our rally and telling us what was going on inside Parliament. And they are absolutely remarkable. They are 100% against Trident, because the Trident nuclear weapons submarines, they are based in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
So you have the Scottish Parliament is against nuclear weapons. The Scottish Government is against nuclear weapons. All the MPs, the Scottish MPs, SNP MPs in Westminster are against Trident. And that, yet the Westminster Parliament voted to impose, to reimpose a new generation of nuclear weapons on Scotland. So many people believe that this will be a factor which will trigger a second referendum in Scotland for independence. They're already very angry and dismayed about the Brexit vote, because Scotland voted to stay in the European Union. So that together with this Trident vote, many people believe is likely to trigger a second independence referendum in Scotland.
It's looking very likely and very strong, isn't it? The young parliamentarians from the Scottish National Party are amazing. I listened to some of, like, Ms. Black was fantastic. I was listening to her.
She is absolutely extraordinary. I must say that, yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Glastonbury Festival. It takes place, it's the biggest music festival, you know, in Britain. Tens of thousands of people go there, and CND always has a speaking slot on the Big Pyramid stage, and she came this year to speak on behalf of CND to these tens of thousands of festival goers, and she was just tremendous, really remarkable young woman.
Inspiring young woman. But it's good that she's in Parliament. So we've got two other subjects I want to cover quickly. One is, three, I guess. One is the Brexit issue. And then, of course, Corbyn, very important people are you know, starved for information about what's happening with Corbyn and the Labour Party. And I also want to talk about the international significance of what we call the Corbyn factor. So maybe we could start with Brexit, since you touched on it with the Scottish National Party. What happened there? Because a good majority, like 59% of the Labour Party members, actually voted to remain in the EU, but the general populace voted to opt out. So that's interesting, because the Tories in the Tory party, it was, I think, 40% voted to remain. The rest wanted to get out. And it seems that the people who are non-party members seems to have led this march against the EU. What's your opinion?
Yes, I mean, it was a close vote. I mean, it was sort of 17 million to 16 million. So there were, you know, it wasn't an overwhelming, but it was a clear vote in favour of Brexit. I can't describe to you how terrible the campaign was. It was, I mean, the decision by the Prime Minister, David Cameron, at that time to call a referendum vote was driven by pressure from the far right. It was driven by UKIP, the kind of far right, very far right,
yes,
nationalist, very very anti-immigration party. Mm. And the whole referendum narrative was kind of hinged around terrible an extreme opposition to immigration in Britain. Being part of the European Union, obviously we're part of the free market, we also have free movement of people from EU citizens. Now, there are millions of British people who live else and work elsewhere in Europe. There are millions of European citizens who come and work in Britain. That's a kind of, you know, it's a fair exchange and movement and so on, you know, and immigrants, if you look at the actual facts and figures, hugely benefit our economy and you know, make a huge contribution to our society. But what happened was that the far right kind of developed this narrative that immigrants, too many immigrants, were responsible for our failing national health service, not enough houses, not enough jobs, all this sort of thing. When, of course, those problems result from decades now of austerity policies. I mean, the recent austerity policies, but neoliberal economic policies even pursued by the Labour Party under Tony Blair. You know, this is a result of economic policies, neoliberal economic policies and more extreme austerity policies, nothing to do with migrants. Yet that, this kind of real reason, what was really to blame, the economic policies, didn't come through in the referendum. And so many people, many people who voted were kind of what we describe as Little Englanders. They think, oh, we'll be much greater again if we're out of Europe. We don't have to deal with these Brussels bureaucrats, you know, and people who were against regulation. You know, there's a lot of protective legislation that we have in Britain because we are in Europe. They want to have a kind of bonfire of the regulations, so there are no protections for people in the workplace, women's rights protection, all those kinds of things. So the people who just want to get rid of all the kind of restraining and kind of civilizing elements of EU legislation.
Of course.
And then there are the other people who just want to kind of say, OK, we can get out and we don't have to have any immigrants anymore. You know, I mean, so that was how it developed. And people who have kind of in communities that have been ignored and disregarded by governments for a long time, you know, where big industries have closed down and no money's been invested and so on. People like that were only hearing it's migrants that are to blame.
Mm.
That truth. And so we had a terrible reactionary racist campaign imposed upon us. And since then, the upsurge in racist attack, anti-immigrant violence, setting fire to immigrant shops, people being attacked and spat on in the street. It is a very terrible and distressing situation here. Really, really terrible.
Mm, that's sad. But the fact remains that Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage, the two main leaders of this very racist campaign in the UK, then abandoned ship once they got the vote. And Farage had a very convenient way of putting it. We've won what we campaigned for, so I'm, you know, abdicating, basically. How do people see that?
Well, we don't quite know how to understand that. Maybe it just took a toll on him personally. Who knows? Mm. But Boris Johnson, he's far from gone. He's not. He didn't win the prime ministership, but he's now foreign secretary,
yes,
which is one of the three most important jobs in the country. And Theresa May, the new prime minister, she was for Remain. So we have a prime minister who did want to remain, but she's saying we have to make Brexit work. But she is a right-wing Tory. There is no doubt about that. So even though we don't have a Brexit prime minister, which could conceivably be a worse situation, nevertheless, we have a political situation where things have moved to the right, because the kind of and the kind of right, this rise of racism and so on, is something that very much has to be challenged. And of course, moving into your point about Jeremy Corbyn, of course, he and the Labour Party campaigned for Remain, and as you said, 60% or so of Labour members voted Remain, and so on. So, you know, that he did a good job with that. But because Remain lost, people in his party who wished to attack him, and, you know, the right and the parliamentary Labour Party, they wish been looking for an excuse to try and get rid of him.
Yes.
Since the day he came in, they said, oh, right, well, he didn't fight hard enough for Remain. He's got to go. So they use this as an excuse to try and move the Labour Party back to the right as well.
So in conjunction with Corbyn, he's being attacked left, right and centre, so to speak.
Mostly right and centre.
Yes, we leave out the left. But the Owen Smith presenting himself as a soft left MP, isn't he? It's almost, no. Is that Owen Smith? Yeah, it is Owen Smith who's contesting the Labour Party leadership, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's from Wales, so he can draw on the kind of long-standing sort of historic links and kind of strong working-class base traditionally in Wales. Many leaders of Labour Party and senior figures in the Labour Party have come from Wales, like Aneurin Bevan and Neil Kinnock and so on, people like that. But to be honest, he is not someone from the left. So he's kind of presenting himself as a kind of soft left unity candidate. But on Monday, for example, he voted for Trident replacement. He said, oh, I used to be a member of CND, but, you know, all this kind of thing. So he's going to, and of course, he was in Jeremy's shadow cabinet until very recently. But, you know, he thinks that I'm not going to suggest that he's solely motivated by careerism. I don't know him and I wouldn't want to say that, but he had a senior position in Jeremy's shadow cabinet until recently, but now he's saying he can do it better, and he has defeated Angela Eagle in the kind of hustings to be the candidate to oppose Jeremy. So that's where we are.
He's got a bit of interesting history as well. He was a lobbyist for Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company. That can't stand in good stead for him, can it? Even, you know, that he's lobbyist for a major pharmaceutical company speaks volumes.
Yes, that's right. You know, it's a difficult thing, but, you know, he can. I haven't really come across him much in the past, but just watching him on television and how he presents himself, you know, he thinks he can talk the talk, you know, and win over members. But to be honest, maybe some people think, oh, you know, maybe regretfully we need to have someone else because, you know, most of the MPs are against Jeremy and he's a great guy, but maybe we need to move on in the interest of unity. For everyone who says that, there are probably, you know, like 100 or even 1,000 people who say, we've got to stick with Jeremy. He's got the policies. He's got the support amongst the membership. You know, all the by-elections and things that have happened since he came in, you know, Labour has done very well. You know, so what's the problem? And they will continue to support Jeremy. I mean, it is a war between the majority of the MPs in Parliament who refuse to accept his leadership, and the overwhelming majority of the Labour Party members, you know, hundreds and thousands of them. The Labour Party hasn't been so big since, I don't know, the early part of the 20th century. It's the biggest party in Britain now. I think it may even be the biggest social democratic party in Europe. It's a huge surge. But instead of embracing the success, you know, these MPs say, oh, no, he's unelectable, you know, and it's unelectable people like Gordon Brown and Neil Kinnock and so on.
Yes.
That are staying, you know, I mean, they've got no shame, really.
Yes. And the interesting part is Labour Party, I just looked up the figures before, is close to 400,000 members. Whereas, like the Greens, they have 60,000, the Liberal Democrats have 61,000, and the Tories have 134,000. So, Labour Party is absolutely massive. Even if you combined all those figures, Labour Party beats them hands down. And this is all because of the Corbyn phenomena. And do you think the right wing is fearful, and they call Corbyn unelectable, that is within the Labour Party, because they're afraid of where Corbyn's taking the politics of UK, and they fear that this movement may be unstoppable.
Yes, it's. I mean, it is a question of the policies. You know, they say Jeremy's not a natural leader, and he doesn't. You know, there's chaos in his office, and you can't get through to them. I mean, all that's all nonsense. The reason is that he does have socialist values. He wants to reintroduce social democratic parties in policies into the Labour Party, which has been a neoliberal party under Blair since the 1990s. You know, that's the truth. It has made that party has made that shift